Welcome to Slaughterhouse Stories. I hope you enjoy the stories I have for you tonight. Hello to all you things that go bump in the night. Hello to all you humans as well. Welcome to the show that brings you creepypastas, short scary stories, and dark horror-themed poetry from all across the world. This is the Slaughterhouse Stories Podcast, Episode 17, Sandy the Clown's Traveling Carnival. I'm your host and narrator, Ghost Train, telling you to lock your doors, get under your blanket, and keep the lights on. Remember, if you want to write in and have your email read on the show, email slaughterhousestoriespodcast@gmail.com with creepypasta requests, your own horrific recommendations, or your own paranormal encounters. Now, before we get to tonight's first story, I'd like to ask you a favor. If you're enjoying the show, please head over and leave a review through iTunes and help spread the word to your friends, family, and the incubus that seduces your girlfriend every night. Whomever. Tell them, be a listener, not a victim. Now, let's get spooky. The first story I have for you tonight comes from an unnamed author about the monsters that haunt many of us every day. The monsters of regret. The monsters of memory. The monsters waiting in the darkness as you spiral down, down, down. Everyone loves a good spiral. What choices does this person face as they rest against a cool bathroom mirror? Let's see where this spiral stops as you listen to Cheater. Can you feel it? I know you can. That thing that when you wake up late at night shivering, it is watching. You try shutting all the doors, windows and curtains, whatever. Just trying to escape the feeling, thinking it's the crisp chill of the night. But you know you're wrong. You try to take pills, drink, eat anything. It keeps you up at night though, causing you constant discomfort. It wakes you up with a hot sweat nearly every night, looking around frantically, feeling sick with fright. It gets closer as you rub your eyes, clearing them of the blur. As you do so, it gets closer. And closer, till you can almost smell its pungent breath over your sweaty red face. You know your time is almost up on this earth, but you don't want it to have the satisfaction of ending you. You're stronger. At least, you think you are. You go to the medicine cupboard, and take one last glance at your reflection in the mirror in it. The blinds over the bathroom mirror swaying in the cool breeze, but the windows are all shut. Your eyes are bloodshot, and bags hang from underneath them. Black as the midnight sky. You caress the cold touch of the mirror as you watch his eyes widen from the gloomy doorway behind you, a malicious smile now on his bony face. You reach into the medicine cabinet and pull out a tub of sleeping pills. Hesitant, you remember what the people had told you. You could be around anything long enough to become tolerant of it. You wonder if that works with the bad memories that still haunt you to this day. That is until you perish the thought, and rest your forehead against the cool surface of the mirror. Your eyes begin to tear slightly. It just watches and anticipates the ending, almost like a brilliant horror film. The sort of stuff you used to like watching. You open the tub, taking your time. No escape now. It's closing in on you. You signal it to stop with a shaking hand. Its harsh smile soon turns into a frown, but it does as you say. You reach into the tub and pull out a handful of pills. They were miniature, but doses of maximum, 2 recommended a day. As it read on the label, you took little time to examine. 2 would be too little to end your pain now. You find yourself crying uncontrollably as you pop each of your last few pills individually into the inside of your bone dry mouth. Into the inside of your bone dry mouth. His smile once again recovers as you find yourself choking in regret of what has become of you, struggling to swallow. A stabbing pain passes into your ribcage, then into your heart. You fall to the cold tiled ground, drooling and cursing at the eyes of death. It watches you mercilessly until your eyes are blurred and you begin to drift away, your last breath of life escaping from your lungs. You see it for a little while, in your head, the feeling of the darkness still lingering with its eyes still staring. You stare back at it for a while, that is until it begins to fade away, as the dark side of your mind retreats away, and a calming light is in the distance before you, as the word, cheater, echoes in the darkness around you, followed by a deep, unsettling laugh. This does not stop you from cracking a pleasant smile, for the first time, for as long as you can remember, as you walk into the light ahead. You wake up to the safety of a hospital bed. The room is quiet and peaceful. You're at peace for the first time in a long time. At the foot of your bed stand two familiar faces, a man and a woman. You remember them as if you saw them a long time ago, but somehow, they still remain vaguely on the edge of your mind. They smile warmly at you, skin as pale as a ghost. You smile back, feeling reassured and safe in the eyes of these people. You pull yourself from the bed, not saying a word. You feel nothing, not even the brisk feeling of your bare feet on the ground below you. You walk over to them, whom are still smiling at you. You walk hand in hand, not knowing why you trust them, but something in your conscience tells you to. Not feeling the need to question your actions, you begin to walk out of the single clinic room and into the growing mist of nothingness. This poor human, taking the wrong way out. The darkness doesn't have to lead to this. You can get help, so get help. Don't end up in the eternal hospital. Get help. Not everyone can face their spiral alone. Get help. Let's quickly transition from the cool touch of one mirror to a story that tells us of a life living inside a mirror. A life that must stay hidden, must stay quiet, or risk forfeiting that life. A choice between your own life and the life of another can be hard for some. What choice will be made here? Listen with me and find out, as you and your reflection listen to Reflection Discharge. Have you ever taken a moment to stop and think about your reflection in the mirror? What if reflections had a life of their own? What if it's their job to watch and mimic you? What if there was a whole new world beyond mirrors? What if your reflection could cross the bridge between the two worlds, but are not allowed to? Well, wonder no more. I am not a human. I am the reflection that broke the rules. It was a hot summer day in 2009. A normal summer day. Children hanging outside with their friends. People at the beach and pools swimming. Even the birds were chirping in the trees, making nature's music. My reflection was heading home from his afternoon work as a bagger at the local grocery store. A shady-looking character in a suit with a stylish brown fedora carrying a metal suitcase approached my reflection as soon as he got out of the grocery store. The look on his face was full of anger. "Yo, you got the cash?" said the man. "No, not yet," replied my reflection. "Listen, man, you gotta get me the cash by sunset, or else I use force," said the man. "Okay, I will try to. Just don't hurt me," replied my reflection. "No, that's not good enough. You will get it to me," shouted the man. "Oh, okay, I will see what I can do," replied my reflection. "See? No, not see. Will. You will get it to me," said the man angrily before stomping away from my reflection. It was then at that moment that I knew this was not going to go so smoothly. I knew after that conversation who that man was. It was June, a worker at the local pawn shop. He and my reflection got into a money dispute a few days ago. He demanded $230,000 for my reflection. I knew there was no way my reflection could come up with that amount of money that fast, as he just works on a mediocre salary. My reflection already knew he couldn't get the money and gave up trying to get it. Once at his house, my reflection approached a mirror. He's known to talk to me sometimes. If others saw him talk to himself in the mirror, they would think he was crazy. I know he's not crazy. He said, "Looks like it's all good in here, man. You've always been there for me." I wish I could say something back, but I couldn't. It was against the rules. If I broke them, I would cease to exist. My reflections always came to me when he felt down. When he was in high school, bullies always picked on him for being short. They would beat him down and torture him and Jim. He always came to me and talked to me after school. I'd always wished that I could help him out, but I couldn't. There were mirrors all around the school, so I'd be forced to watch him get bullied 5 days a week without being able to help. Sunset came quicker than I thought. My reflection just sat there, awaiting the man to come. There was a knock at the door. My reflection opened it. It was June.
"Yo, got the money?"
asked June. "I do not," replied my reflection.
"Well, I told you what would happen,"
said June as he pulled out a gun. "I know. You gonna shoot me?" asked my reflection.
"No, not yet. I've got this," said June as he pulled out an army knife.
June quickly stabbed my reflection several times. Blood spilled out of my reflection's body like it was an endless supply. And I couldn't do anything. I could just watch. My reflection couldn't take much more. He was soon to die. June just laughed like a psychopath. Then June took a gun to my reflection's head. He laughed louder than before. The smile on his face was just sick. He placed his index finger on the trigger.
"You should have paid up when you could," said June.
My reflection couldn't respond in his shape. His words came out as gargles as blood spilled from his mouth. I had two choices here. I could just watch and do nothing, or I could help him, but break the rules and cease to exist. I chose to break the rules. I used all my force to leap out of the mirror. I did it. I went to the other side where my reflection was. I was behind June, so he, nor my reflection, could spot me. I went upstairs to get my reflection's pistol. I got the pistol, then placed it against June's head. June didn't laugh anymore. He was frightened. He had no clue who I was. I pulled the trigger. June fell to the floor, blood oozing from his head. Before I went back to the mirror, I had to say something to my reflection, but disguise my voice. "Don't give up yet. You're still young and have a lot to live for. We have always been together." I then went back into the mirror and awaited my fate. This is where I end my journal.
Reflection's point of view.
I had been saved by someone I couldn't see. I guess I do have a lot more to live for than I thought. With June dead, I was safe again. There was something after that day that was weird, though. Whenever I approached a mirror, my reflection wasn't there. It was really creepy at first, but I'd gotten used to it. I miss my reflection. The reflection did what it had to do, but it's a shame the reflection had to die for mistakes of a human. You really don't care about who you put in harm's way. As one of spooky listeners said, you humans are the real monsters. Let's put my disgust for the flesh bags aside for now, because it's time for this week's horrific recommendation. This week, I want to recommend something for you listeners who have treated your bodies as works of art, as a canvas. For our tattooed listeners, specializing in tattoo aftercare, Mad Rabbit has created an all-natural soothing gel to help the healing process after getting your tattoo. But along with that, they have a tattoo balm that moisturizes and really makes tattoos that are 10 years old shine like they are brand new. My tattoos haven't looked this good since I got them. They even have sunscreen that will help protect your tattoos from getting damaged by the harsh UV rays of the sun. So for all you daywalkers out there, this is something you definitely need. If you have tattoos, we're going to get your first one. Head over to madrabbittattoo.com and grab some of these amazing products. Your tattoos will thank you. Now that I've given you this week's recommendation, let's take a trip down to open mic night at Beazlepub. Welcome, fiends, to open mic night at Beazlepub, where we invite you to sit right here and go into the more poetic side of fear. Poems of murder, creatures, and ghosts.
all the things that scare you the most.
This week, I was going to skip out on Edgar Allan Poe, but then I went ahead and recorded my favorite poem of all time. So guess what I have for you this week? That's right, you know the one. But before that, Maurice Ogden brings us his poem about a famous hangman rolling into town, looking for fresh necks for his rope, and the one person who would be the hangman's helper. Keep your necks safe, your windows closed, and enjoy the verses of the hangman and the raven.
Into our town the hangman came, smelling of gold and blood and flame. And he paced our bricks with a diffident air, and built his frame on the courthouse square. The scaffold stood by the courthouse side, only as wide as the door was wide, a frame as tall, or little more, than the capping sill of the courthouse door. And we wondered, whenever we had the time, who the criminal, what the crime, that hangman judged with the yellow twist of knotted hemp in his busy fist. And innocent though we were, with dread, we passed those eyes of buckshot lead, till one cried, "Hangman, who is he, for whom you raise the gallows tree?" Then a twinkle grew in the buckshot eye, and he gave us a riddle instead of reply. "He who serves me best," said he, "shall earn the rope on the gallows tree." And he stepped down and laid his hand on a man who came from another land, and we breathed again for another's grief. At the hangman's hand was our relief, and the gallows frame on the courthouse lawn. By tomorrow's sun would be struck and gone. So we gave him way and no one spoke, out of respect for his hangman's cloak. The next day's sun looked mildly down on roof and street in our quiet town, and stark and black in the morning air, the gallows tree on the courthouse square. And the hangman stood at his usual stand, with the yellow hemp in his busy hand, with his buckshot eye and his jaw like a pike, and his air so knowing and businesslike. And we cried, "Hangman, have you not done yesterday with the alien one?" Then we fell silent and stood amazed. Oh, not for him was the gallows raised. He laughed a laugh as he looked at us. "Did you think I'd gone to all this fuss? To hang one man, that's a thing I do. To stretch the rope when the rope is new." Then one cried, "Murderer." One cried shame, and into our midst the hangman came. "To that man's place do you hold," said he, "with him that was meant for the gallows tree." And he laid his hand on that one's arm, and we shrank back in quick alarm, and we gave him way and no one spoke, out of fear of his hangman's cloak. That night we saw with dread surprise, the hangman's scaffold had grown in size, fed by the blood beneath the chute. The gallows tree had taken root, now as wide or a little more than the steps that led to the courthouse door, as tall as the writing or nearly as tall, halfway up on the courthouse wall. The third he took, we had all heard tell, was a usurer and infidel. "And what," said the hangman, "have you to do with the gallows bound?" And he a Jew. And we cried out, "Is this one he who has served you well and faithfully?" The hangman smiled, "It's a clever scheme to try the strength of the gallows beam." The fourth man's dark accusing song had scratched out comfort hard and long, and what concern he gave us back. "Have you for the doomed in black?" The fifth, the sixth, and we cried again, "Hangman, hangman, is this the man?" "It's a trick," he said, "that we hangmen know, for easing the trap when the trap springs slow." And so we ceased and asked no more, as the hangman tallied his bloody score. And sun by sun, and night by night, the gallows grew to monstrous height. The wings of the scaffold opened wide, till they covered the square from side to side. And the monster crossbeam, looking down, cast its shadow across the town. Then through the town the hangman came, and called in the empty streets my name. And I looked at the gallows soaring tall, and thought, "There is no one left at all for hanging," and so he calls to me to help pull down the gallows tree. And I went out with right good hope to the hangman's tree and the hangman's rope. He smiled at me as I came down to the courthouse square through the silent town. and supple and stretched in his busy hand, was the yellow twist of the hempen strand, and he whistled his tune as he tried the drop, and it sprang down with a ready snap, and then with a smile of awful command, he laid his hand upon my hand. "You tricked me, hangman," I shouted then, "that your scaffold was built for other men, and I am no henchman of yours," I cried. "You lied to me, hangman, folly lied." Then a twinkle grew in his buckshot eye. "Lied to you, tricked you," he said, "not I. For I answered straight and I told you true. The scaffold was raised for none but you. For who has served me more faithfully than you with your coward's hope," said he. "And where are the others that might have stood side by your side in the common good?" "Dead," I whispered, and amiably, "murdered," the hangman corrected me. "First the alien, then the Jew. I did no more than you let me do. Beneath the beam that blocked the sky, none had stood so alone as I." And the hangman strapped me, and no voice there cried stay for me in the empty square.
Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping, rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, "tapping at my chamber door, only this, and nothing more." Ah, distinctly I remember, it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow, vainly I sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow, sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore, nameless here forevermore. And the silken sad uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, "'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, that it is, and nothing more." Presently my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. "Sir," said I, "or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore, but the fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping, tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door, darkness there, and nothing more. Deep into the darkness peering, long I stood there, wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortals ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore. This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, Lenore. Merely this, and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning, soon again I heard a tapping, something louder than before. Surely, said I, surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what threat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind, and nothing more. Open here I flung the shutter, when, with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven, of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door, perched and sat, and nothing more. Then this ebony bird beguiling my sad fancy into smiling, by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. "Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou," I said, "art sure no craven, ghastly, grim, and ancient raven, wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what the lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." Much I marveled this ungainly fowl to hear a discourse so plainly, though his answer little meaning, little relevancy bore, for we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door, bird or beast upon a sculptured bust above his chamber door, with such name as Nevermore. But the raven, sitting lonely on that placid bust, spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour.
nothing further than he uttered, not a feather than he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, other friends have flown before, on the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. Then the bird said, nevermore. Startled at the stillness broken by reply so aptly spoken, doubtless, said I, what it utters is its only stock and store, caught from some unhappy master, whom unmerciful disaster followed fast and followed faster, till his songs one burden bore, till the dirges of his hope that melancholy burden bore, of never, nevermore. But the raven still beguiling all my sad soul into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then, upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking, fancy unto fancy, thinking what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt and ominous bird of yore, meant in croaking, nevermore. Thus I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing, to the fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining, on the cushion's velvet lining that the lamplight gloated over, but whose velvet violet lining with the lamplight gloating over, she shall press, ah, nevermore. Then, methought, the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer, whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God hath lent thee, by these angels he hath sent thee, respite, respite nepenthe, from thy memories of Lenore. Quaff, O quaff this kind nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, whether tempter sent, or where the tempest tossed thee here ashore, desolate yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore. Is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, by that heaven that bends above us, by that God we both adore, tell the soul with sorrow laden, if within a distant Iden, it shall clasp a sainted maiden, whom the angels name Lenore, clasp a rare and radiant maiden, whom the angels name Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Be that word our sign of parting, bird or fiend, I shrieked, upstarting. Get thee back into the tempest and the night's Plutonian shore. Leave no black plumes a token of that lie thy soul hath spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken. Quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart, and take thy form from off my door. Quoth the raven, nevermore. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting, on the pallet bust of palace just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming, and the lamplight over him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted nevermore. There really is no one better than Poe. I know I said that last week too, but the raven, masterful. And the hangman again teaches that you fleshies shouldn't be so quick to turn on those around you. Thank you for enjoying another open mic night. Now let's head back and get ready for tonight's feature story. It's time we take a trip to the Funhouse. This month brings you a story, not a bit of clown that stalks you in the night, following you, chasing you, but instead a clown attraction at a carnival that is just that, attracting. It draws people to it, moving from town to town and claiming those who came to see it. So hang on tight and try not to get hypnotized and drawn in as I tell you the tale of Sandy the Clown's Traveling Carnival. I love carnivals. I have to admit it. I really do love them. And I have for a long time. When I was about 7, I went to my first carnival. I don't remember what its name was, or even where it was. But it was probably the best day of my entire childhood. It was nighttime, so of course it was dark and the lights were on. I loved all the bright colors that lit up the place as if the entire carnival was engulfed in a magical glow. I remember the carousel, with all the beautiful horses painted with golds and reds. I was particularly fond of the big wheel, standing there, covered in lights and towering over everything else. You felt like you owned the world when your cabin reached the top. I loved the candy floss for its sweet taste, warmth, color, and even the comical way it would stick to your lips every time you took a bite. About the time I turned 18, I started getting interest in older carnivals and circuses. The ones that had history, stories, and so on. As some of them aren't as popular, I spent a lot of my spare time searching for good places to go on the internet. That's how I found Sandy the Clown's Traveling Carnival. It started when I was scrolling through the results on Google. I was on about the 4th or 5th page when I came across the link. Sandy's Traveling Carnival. Under the link, the text read, "Sandy's looking forward to meeting you." I clicked the link, and it led me to a website with information about the carnival. The place had apparently been open since the late 1880s and would change locations every 2 weeks. It seemed like fun, so of course my face lit up when I saw that it would arrive just outside my hometown in less than a month. I ordered tickets and decided to have a little look around the site for more information. I found a map which showed that the carnival had about 10 stalls, each with different games and shops, a small petting zoo that housed about 5 animals, some portaloos, 2 little shops, and a random building called Sandy's Here. It was mentioned nowhere else on the site, so I couldn't really find that much about it. About a month passed, and it was time to go to the carnival. I got in my car and drove over to the location. I parked in the field that had been rented for a car park, and made my way over to the entrance. Once I got there, I was greeted by the presence of a life-sized wooden statue of a clown. The paint was peeling and cracked. It was covered in dust. It stood on a box which read, "Sandy welcomes you to his carnival." I went on through the gate and gave my tickets to the ticket desk and headed on through to the hustle and bustle of the carnival. Everything was perfect. The stalls were old but well kept. With classic games, families were jostling about, buying ice cream and enjoying themselves. I'd sometimes pass someone who seemed to be very happy with everything, smiling nearly literally from ear to ear. I played some games, ate some candy floss, and enjoyed the sun. It was all great. I looked at my map and realized I was pretty near to the building, labeled as Sandy's Here, and decided to check it out. I scanned the outside of the building. It looked like a funhouse or something, and a foldable one, which I guess was pretty explainable. I made my way up to the door and went inside. The wooden paneling was decorated with paintings of Sandy the Clown, handing out balloons to an array of people. The balloons were designed in such a way that they looked exactly like the heads of the people he was giving them to, only with creepy, disjointed smiles that stretched across their faces. I shuddered and decided to look away from the paintings and carry on walking. Once I reached the door, a thick, musty smell hit my nostrils, and dust made my eyes itch and tear up. The place is old. Of course there's some dust. The room was dimly lit and nearly empty, except for an old laughing clown. If you were unaware, a laughing clown is the upper torso of a person that sits in a glass case and shakes around and laughs when you put a coin in it. It was the same as the wooden statue outside, but something was off. It was in perfect condition. The paint looked new. The clothes bright and clean. The glass almost invisible. The worst part were the eyes. They looked real. I could almost see the shine of liquid on them. They stood out. It was really unnerving. I decided I was being silly. I mean, a lot of old things seem creepy, so I swallowed my fear and walked up to it. I reached into my pocket for a coin and pushed it into the slot. The machinery started whirling, and the model started to move. A tiny voice box started playing an almost maniacal laughter. I took a step back. This was terrifying. The clown spun around, and the laughing got louder and louder. I wanted to run, but my legs wouldn't move. I wanted to close my eyes, but they were glued to the spinning dummy. Suddenly, the eyes turned to look at me. They were staring straight through me. Actually, this is pretty funny. I found myself laughing along, a smile spreading across my face. I love Sandy, and you should too. Go visit him sometime. Sandy can't wait to meet you. Sandy is getting so many new friends with this carnival. I wonder if any of our dear listeners now feel the pull. You love Sandy. Go visit him sometime. Sandy can't wait to meet you. Now, I believe that is enough scares for this week. I hope you will join me again next week for more stories that are sure to keep you afraid during the day and awake at night. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the stories that I had for you tonight. And until next time.
Stay spooky.